Throughout our lives, as social and curious beings, humans have had an innate drive to seek answers. Our curiosity, a fundamental trait in the grand process of evolution, has propelled us to move forward. And, my dear listeners, as we pursued knowledge, divisions and disciplines emerged, quantifying it into sciences and other subjects. And over time, science became woven within curriculum books, shaping the educational landscape. Yet, among this structured learning, profound questions about our purpose persist. Personally schooled with these books, I found myself pondering deeply about my identity and about my place in the world. Dear listeners, the quest to define who am I remains ongoing for me, and as I believe it does for so many of you. However, in rare moments when I cast my gaze upwards, I witness individuals defying societal norms, bravely shaping their identities. These individuals become beacons of inspiration, especially during our darkest times. And I know communication becomes a conduit for learning, allowing us to incorporate deeper meanings into our lives through invaluable lessons. I'm humbled, my dear listeners, as I present an episode featuring a remarkable individual whose achievements have garnered international recognition, being the subject of an Emmy Award-winning documentary. It is my honor to interview Dr. Colleen Kelly, the founder of Kids Chemical Solutions. Her mission is to impart molecular literacy and convey the beauty of science that has resonated with children worldwide. Dr. Kelly embarked on her journey of chemistry among the hallowed halls of academia, where her passion for discovery ignited like a flame. Graduating with distinction from the University of Richmond with a bachelor's degree in chemistry, she pursued knowledge that led her to the prestigious Penn State University, where she earned her PhD at just the age of 24. Fast forward 3 decades later, and we find Dr. Kelly at the zenith of her brilliant career, poised at the precipice of a very profound revelation. As a luminary in the field of chemistry education at the University of Arizona, she found herself gripped by a singular question that would shape her destiny. Why do my students perceive chemistry as a challenge? In her tireless pursuit of an answer, Dr. Kelly unearthed a profound truth that the language of chemistry, like the written word, holds the key to comprehension. Thus, she started talking about molecular literacy, a paradigm shift that redefines how we perceive and engage with the elemental fabric of our world. But Dr. Kelly's contribution extends beyond the realm of academia. She's a visionary force behind Kids Chemical Solution, which is a groundbreaking initiative that harnesses the power of comics to demystify the intricacies of chemistry for learners of all ages. Through her innovative approach, she has unlocked the doors of scientific understanding for countless minds, igniting a passion for learning that transcends traditional boundaries. This is something that I don't believe, but I have with me Dr. Colleen here. And first of all, greetings from India. It's such an honor to meet you. Thank you so much for coming. And don't mind my groggy voice and don't mind my groggy eyes. It's 7 a.m. here. How have you been? How was your evening?
Good. I appreciate you hosting me. This is great. I can't wait for our conversation.
Yes. And a person like you should not need any introduction. I've already introduced you, but could you just in a few lines tell us who you are, what you do, and what you plan on doing?
Okay, great. Yeah, my name is Colleen Kelly, and I am the creator and founder of a program called Kids Chemical Solutions. And it's a comic book-based curriculum to teach college-level chemistry concepts to kids as early as age 8. Incorporated in the curriculum are games, puzzles, activities, audiobooks, and we offer quite a bit of things for free because our aim is to increase molecular literacy globally.
Right. And you are the subject of Comic Book Chemistry, which won 2023 Emmy Award. Now, tell me, how did you feel, firstly, about being the subject of such a brilliant documentary? And secondly, how did you feel when you won?
Well, we filmed it because there was some press about what I was doing at the university where I teach. I'm a chemistry professor by trade. And so the local press got wind of what I was doing and how I was creating these comic books, and they asked if they could have their public broadcasting network come in and create this documentary. And I said, sure. And I really didn't think it was going to create anything. They were just following me around, and you saw the footage, and came to my home and did some cool things. And they were just two really nice guys, part of the crew. And when it came out, I thought, well, this is lovely. This is great. And it was a full year later that after it was released, that they alerted me that it had won an Emmy. So it took me totally by surprise.
It shouldn't, because it's a brilliant documentary. I mean,
Thank you.
why? Colin, I wanted to ask, why comics? Like, you could have chosen any other form of media, but you said that you also have audio and all on your webpage, but your main focus is on comics, am I right?
My main focus is on comics, and that was just, process of elimination. When I started this process, I started writing it as a fun, funny textbook. And I took a college level textbook and said, okay, I'm going to rewrite this. I also tell stories in my classroom. So I was integrating all the stories I had told for the last 25, 30 years in my classroom into the textbook, and came up with this gigantic manuscript. And when I submitted that, it was rejected across the board because I think I was trying to juxtapose storytelling, humor, and then, a textbook. So I went to revise it and look at it for a different medium, and I realized that one powerful way to do what I was doing was through dialogue between characters and write it as a script. And when you're writing in heavy dialogue, it either needs to be a script for screen or a comic book. Those are your two options, because it really was coming out to be a script. So the comic book format then came to the surface as, okay, this is what I'm going to need to do.
And something just spurred in you that you were like, I want to go ahead with this work. Were there any positive feedbacks that you got? First of all, whom did you share it this with when you came up with the first draft of your comic, and how did they react?
Well, I shared it with quite a few people in the publishing industry, and I got rejected from all of them. So, it was a script format. Even when I had a sample, it was still, people were not getting it. They weren't seeing it. So, it took me quite a few, almost a year of querying different publishers and agents and editors. And then I finally had someone who believed in what I was doing and agreed to publish the series now, because there's four books in a series of 10, so the series is growing, and I'm forever grateful for them for seeing my vision and trusting in what I was doing, because I was confident that this was going to make a big difference and need it to be out into the world. And it's just difficult because what I've done is I've taken a very complex subject and made it simple, fun, and funny, but I haven't lowered the level of rigor. And I think that's what gets confused quite a bit, is they'll see cute characters and humor and assume that there's no rigor. And it's just the opposite. I mean, the rigor is elevated to the level of college chemistry. So I think that's where people get really confused, because the intended audience is anyone between 8 and 108. If you've not learned chemistry, this is where you can start. And if you failed chemistry, then you should probably go back and read these. So,
You said in your video, this is a question from one of my friends, that science exists beyond laboratory. When did you realize that, firstly? Because we traditionally follow this linear path in science. And as we age, science tends to get more complex. The level of textbooks goes from here to here to here to here to here. So when
yeah.
did you realize that, the research that you're doing, it's something that doesn't confine in these walls and it can go beyond? And what was your thought process during it?
Well, I think when you're looking at problem solving, certainly I'm a research scientist by training, and I've had, most of my career centered around research science in a laboratory. And I'm also curious. So I love perfume, and I wanted to see if I could create a way to make perfume that was expensive last longer on my skin. So that's something you do at home, right? So there's all these queries that you can have. The other day I was making cookies and didn't have baking soda. And then I'm thinking, okay, well, what do I have? Right? So if you understand the chemistry, most of the world you can make sense of. And so it's just, I think just in everyday life, you have gum stuck on the bottom of your shoe. You can't wash it off with soap and water because it's a non-polar molecule with a polar, especially if it's sugar-free gum, right? There's no sugar in it, so it's not going to dissolve in water. So these are things that, these kind of tactics for life are all around us. And I can come up with a million examples like that. And that's the laboratory of life. And for me, that's what I'm talking about with molecular literacy, is being able to understand that chewing gum, sugar-free chewing gum, is nonpolar, so you need to remove it with a nonpolar substance.
And this made you work on a comic which is now being understood by fourth graders, which brings me to my next question. How did you like you've stressed the importance of science education a lot, Colleen, especially in your video when I saw it, and your work as well. You have stressed the importance of science education. Why is it important? Why is it important to be scientifically literate? This means, like, as we age, like I said, we've made science more complicated. Our curiosity drops, right? So,
Right.
why did you target children firstly? For, of course, like, children are the primary. Like you can give them comics, but was there any secondary thought that went in your head that you were like, I want to test out these kids. I want to see what happens when you dumb down science but keep the scientific temperament alive.
Right. Yeah. So, I was faced with a career, 30 years of brilliant students in front of me, in an organic chemistry classroom. So these are students in their early 20s who want to become physicians, mainly, and they're struggling, and they're brilliant in all their other classes, and they're failing my class. And this is globally. This organic chemistry failures are
Yes,
notorious.
I can tell
We
you.
all have the stories. We've all heard the lore, which is
Yeah,
true.
yeah.
So I started to wonder why it is these brilliant students are struggling in this particular arena. And what I realized is they were coming to college as molecularly illiterate. So they had not spent enough time with the symbols of the periodic table and the foundations. So imagine if you took a 15-year-old and taught them how to read in maybe a year, and then didn't teach them again. And then they go to college and they have to read a novel by Hemingway, analyze it, dissect it, write an essay, right? And this is what we're doing with molecular literacy. When I realized that learning chemistry was the same as learning how to read, I did some research on when is the best time to teach a human being this kind of neural pathway, based skill. And children go from learning how to read to reading to learn. That transition happens around age 8. So they have mastered reading, where they can now pick up a book to learn something else, where the reading then is ancillary. And that's when their neural pathway is open enough to absorb a new alphabet. So the alphabet that I'm talking about is the periodic table, is the alphabet of science. So it made a lot of sense to me that what we're teaching at the college level is not college level. It really should be taught to younger kids. Again, another analogy is just like music. We would never teach a 21-year-old how to play the piano cold, and then say in 2 years you need to be a conductor of an orchestra, right? And that's what we do with physicians. We don't give them much time and training in the sciences. It's a lifetime. It's not a one-time shot and then there you go. So all my research pointed to earlier is better, and that if we want to elevate scientific thinking, making molecular literacy a normal part of everybody's learning is one way to do it.
And you succeeded in doing
Well,
so, specifically
I'm
when you
trying.
got Yeah, but when you got like such a positive feedback from children, how did you feel when you went to the children and they were asking you questions about molecular biology, like why is this iron being positively charged, and what did you feel?
Oh yeah. I mean, it's always fantastic when I watch them devour the subject. I think what's equally satisfying is they're able to master the chemistry, and that's amazing, and I love that. But I also love that they love the stories. They do not want to put the books down. They want to read the books so fast, and they keep asking me that when the fifth one is coming out. So it's in there. In my mind, when I'm watching them, it's like a really great series, like Harry Potter, like the anxiousness of waiting, like when is the fifth
Exactly
one
what I
coming
was
out?
going to
What's the
say. Like, you're
book
the
about?
Harry Potter for them, like J.K. Rowling of molecular biology, so and chemistry.
So they love the stories, and that I had done enough research to know that they could learn the chemistry. You never know if someone's going to love your stories, so that was great.
Yes. And how did you approach the artists? Like, did you have anybody, like, did you come from science, like, you came from an art background, or did you have somebody who came from an art background whom you collaborated with?
Yeah, one of my students went to art school, and so she is an artist, and she was in my class, and so she had heard some of these stories, had been involved with, in my class, and I just asked her if she, I knew she knew enough chemistry because I had taught her, so I knew that I'd be able to communicate with her that way, and that was essential. So she provided the concept art, and I have a newer artist now who was a biochemistry major at the University of Washington. And so there's these crossover people that I find who have a chemistry background but are also artists by training. And so
Okay. Well,
Krista's now picking up a lot of the work.
that is great. And how do you balance both your worlds? Like, you work at University of Arizona, if I'm not wrong, and you are also making books, which is, I feel like, a full-time work. So how do you balance
Yeah.
both of these things together is what I wanted to ask.
Well, I think, you get to a point in your career and life when you're at the later stages. So I'll talk about lifestyle first. I have an empty nest, and that's what we call in the United States when all the kids are gone. And all of a sudden, you have a lot more free time because you do. You're not driving around to things and worrying about homework and all of that.
Yeah.
So personally, I had some opening a space open for something like this. And then professionally, a lot of what I'm doing is in the research realm of chemistry education, right? So when I'm investigating these topics and looking, it's an academic process as well.
That is amazing. And Colleen, like, one more thing. The language of chemistry, like you said, it's the one, it's very complex, right? How did you create your content in such a way? Like, do you have any like timeline that you go with, that you have to release this book tomorrow or day after tomorrow, for example? And you are short on time. I just, like, this is one of my friends' questions, like, how do you manage time so effectively? Because they struggle with it.
You mean for creating the books, writing them?
Creating the books and for writing them, yes.
A lot of the writing, if I reflect upon it, came during the pandemic, which is an odd time for all of us, right? So I got the bulk of what you are reading now done when we couldn't leave the house. So right now with the fifth book is my first time post-pandemic, trying to juggle all of that. And I think what I've learned is when I'm in a good space and I'm writing, just don't stop, keep going. And again, I'm very fortunate that I don't have to stop to, take care of family and things like that. So it's difficult. And 10 years ago, there's no way I could have done this. I was way too busy as a mom, and my career was more scientific, making molecules and things like that. So, both the career shift, the pandemic, and then the empty nest really helped out boost this project forward a lot.
And long term, I wanted to ask you, what are your goals regarding comic book chemistry? Like, what do you feel this project that you've started will be in, let's say, 7, 8 years from now?
That's a great question. I'd like to have the entire series complete because the entire series represents a full semester of college chemistry. So I would like that series to be complete and published, but more than that, distributed. And that's what I'm learning is I'm happy these books exist in the world, but they need to exist globally, broadly. So right now I'm looking for donors and sponsors. So that I can donate books to, like if I could send a box of books to you, that would be great. But I need donations for that. I need funding for that. So I recognize that schools and different areas of the world may not be able to afford books. They are relatively inexpensive compared to other science curriculum. I would say they're about a tenth of the price of other science curriculum. So they are inexpensive. However, I don't presume that, I don't know what people's financial situation is. So we're on a quest and a mission to find those maybe some big corporate sponsorship or government sponsorship to make sure that these are accessible globally so that everybody has a chance to understand what's happening with, what is a carbon footprint, where does that come from? These kind of issues that need to be solved. And the more people that have a correct understanding of these environmental, medical, whatever processes, the better off we're going to be.
So inculcating this in a scientific curriculum might be hard internationally because we tend to follow a board, and it might take a few like strong donations, I would say, for you to expand it on a global level. And I wish you all the best with it. That's where people like us come in. We talk to you and we tell other people what amazing work you're doing. So thank you so much for coming again, Colleen. I have one last question for you, which is, do you
Sure.
have end notes for people who are trying to make change in science through their content? Like you picked up art. So do you have any end notes for people who wanted to make change in science through content creation?
Yeah,
Specifically.
I would say make sure that you're presenting science as an inclusive, I'll just use the word club, inclusively. And I say that because I think the first time you put on a lab coat and safety glasses and make it a costume, that costume is alienating to most. And as soon as you're wearing a lab coat and safety goggles, people think I'm not smart enough to do that. And in fact, it has nothing to do with the lab coat and safety goggles. That's why I'm never in them, and I'm creating a YouTube channel where I'm not in any of that. So I would encourage science educators to create things that are real. Explosions don't help anyone. In fact, chemists never want to have an explosion, right? That's not our goal. We don't want, if you're creating the vaccine for COVID, you certainly didn't want that to blow up, right? So it's ridiculous. So we need a complete rebranding. So I think science educators should be very thoughtful about what they are presenting as the brand. Explosions should not happen. They're dangerous. They're bad for the environment and they're consumable. They're just horrible. Making things that are useless, slime, those kind of things, not helpful. There are things that you can do that are helpful. You can make food that's edible, that's nutritious, it's environmentally friendly. So, be more mindful about how you're presenting your science. And if you're presenting it as an exclusive club, maybe think about how can I make it more inclusive?
Because science is not for just a few people, it's for everybody in the world. It's
It's for
like
everybody.
everybody speaks, right? Thank you so much, Colleen, for coming and speaking about these issues, specifically scientific literacy, and how beautifully you've created your comic. I just wanted to say that I wish more people hear this episode and you get more positive feedback from India. Thank you so much for coming and speaking, and I'll link your work to this, to the description of this episode. How did you feel talking to me? I just wanted to know.
Oh, great. It was super fun.
Sorry if I didn't sound okay, because the
No, you sounded great. Yeah.
Morning is just happening right now, so that's why I was just very nervous meeting you as well. And my friends are super excited about this episode. Let me tell you, they were like over the moon when they got to know that I am going to host you, and they were like, ask her this, and I have like 15 more questions to ask you, but because of time, I can't. So, but
Yeah.
thank you so much.
I was going to make a comment too, and maybe when you're talking with your friends,
Yeah.
and the curriculum is designed to be also just a book kids buy, right? It doesn't have to be in schools. Most of the I use it in an after school program where they pick it up off the shelf and just go in a corner and read it, right? So there's no downside to having a great book
Yeah, that is what I'm saying.
with a good story. So, as I'm on this quest to become more global, I in the United States too, it's very difficult to get into schools, but there's no reason it can't be in libraries, right?
Exactly.
So I think there's a lot of good workarounds. And if we think about it just as a really great book, that's a start. And then eventually people will say, oh, maybe I'd like to teach from this, because it's set up for that, but it's also set up for an independent learner to put it in their backpack and read it in the car on the way home or on the bus on the way home.
Just like a storybook is what you're
Just
saying.
like a storybook, yeah.
That is what your aim is currently, but if it's inculcated in a curriculum, you'll be more than happy.
More than happy, yes,
Exactly.
yeah.
That's where you see yourself in 10 years, am I right?
Hopefully, yeah.
And you will succeed, I am pretty sure with it. So do you have have you raised any funding for this till now? Like who
No,
sponsors?
I've self-funded all of this.
That is amazing.
I don't know. I have to get another job, I think. I don't know. I believe in the project so much that I've self-funded it. I am looking for funding. And so that's why on these podcasts, I do, put that out there that the funding I'm looking for is for donors,
Yeah.
because I really think donating the books is a good thing to do.
And what about have you thought about how will additional shipping charges cost if you are trying to sell it globally? There'll be a lot of shipping charges, right? So that's why maybe
Yes.
you're looking for donors
Yep.
who are more global, right? If I'm thinking.
Right. If there was someone from India who would buy them in bulk, right, and
Right.
then have a way to distribute them, then the community in India would not need to pay for the shipping charges, for example. So
Right.
that would be one way to donate, is just to have someone buy, all of these and then have them available.
That's great. And I hope people listen to this and you get more feedback from India. That is what my goal is. And the work that you're doing is amazing. Given that it's self-funded, I just got to know. It is crazy that you've put so much in this one project. And I really, really, really think it's gonna go really big globally. Thank you so much, Colleen, for coming and
Thank
speaking.
you.
It was amazing talking to you, and I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful night. Thank you.
Yep, have a great day.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
My dearest listener, coming from the heart of rural India, I extend my deepest gratitude to each and every one of you for tuning in, for engaging with my thoughts and the conversations that unfold on my platform. Your presence here means the world to me, and I am committed to delivering content that resonates with your intellect and your spirit. Today, as we conclude this enlightening conversation with Dr. Kelly, I am filled with nothing but gratitude for the opportunity to talk about depths of knowledge and insight with such a humble and grounded individual. Dr. Kelly, your presence here has been a true blessing for me, and I thank you sincerely for sharing your wisdom with us. To my dear listeners, I implore you to talk and explore about Dr. Kelly's remarkable body of work and to question the very fabric of how science is traditionally taught. What if the dissemination of knowledge were to break free from the shackles of convention and flow as effortlessly as art? Let us all ignite a revolution of thought, challenging the status quo and fostering open discussions on the pedagogy of science itself. If you like this episode, share this episode with your friends and follow the podcast on whatever platform you're listening it on. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing right now, I just hope that tomorrow brings a better day for you, and I shall see you in the next episode. Darkness may hold mysteries, my dear listeners, yet it should not be feared. Let us remember that it's only through communicating that we not only connect with others, but also establish boundaries when needed. May our conversations continue to illuminate the path ahead, guiding us through both the known and the unknown. Until we meet again, my dearest listener, bye.